The opinions expressed on the ACB Media Network are those of the content providers and should not be viewed as an endorsement of any product or service. Nor does it reflect the views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
All right. Welcome, everybody. I am one of the facilitators today. My name is Danette, and my person who's going to facilitate with me when I need him is Doug, president of AAVL. Our host is Sheila, and our streamer, connector, and broadcaster is Jane Saw, and our speaker, we've got many people today. Welcome to our speaker is Sam. He's going to talk to us a little bit about seniors and technology. Sam, can you unmute? Well, first of all, Doug, do you want to say anything?
No, I just welcome everybody, and I'm looking forward to hearing about this, too. I've got some questions ready, and I hope everybody else does, too. I think this is supposed to be interactive, and I think Sam has a reputation for being very interactive, so let's let it go.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Welcome, Sam.
You're hello.
Up. Oh. Hey.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me on this beautiful Monday.
Yeah. Is it raining where you are?
No, it's actually beautiful. I'm located in central Kentucky, in Lexington, which is home of the University of Kentucky. And it is beautiful, but hot. So I'm definitely staying inside today.
Yeah. So first, Sam, I'd like you to tell us about you.
Sure. I'll give you kind of my backstory. So
yeah.
I was diagnosed at age 11 with Stargardt's disease. If anybody out there isn't familiar with it, Stargardt's is a juvenile or early onset form of macular degeneration. So kind of similar to age-related macular degeneration, but mine is caused by an inherited retinal disease, a recessive gene mutation in a recessive gene that both parents had, and came together and created two beautiful blind children. My sister and I both have Stargardt's. We were both right around age 11 when we were diagnosed. And so like most macular degeneration, no central vision. I lost my central vision pretty early on. I still have my peripheral, which I'm thankful for. And but because no central vision, that means no depth perception. That means not the best colors. That means night blindness. And no detail vision. So even though I can see the things around me, I can't see the detail of the things around me, you know, which obviously makes it difficult seeing faces. Never been able to legally drive. I'm actually a really good driver. It's just nobody lets me drive. and that never, you know, not being able to read even large print since I was a teenager and that sort of thing. So, fast forward, I went through public schools just like most people. I'm originally from North Carolina, grew up all up and down the East Coast, and went through public schools up until high school. High school, I did some private schooling, and then I ended up at the School for the Blind in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I'm originally from, and I graduated from there. And that was fantastic for me. So that was, other than my sister, that was really the first... Literally the first other person with vision impairment that I had ever met was at that school. And so for the first time, I was around other kids that were like me, you know, like I wasn't just the weird kid, weird blind kid. I was around a bunch of other weird blind kids, and it was awesome. I loved it. And so I had a great time, graduated from there, and then eventually moved to Kentucky. Had kind of odd jobs here and there, worked a lot in restaurants, a lot of cooking, a lot of dealing with food. I've always been a creative person. So at one point I kind of married those two together and taught cake decorating classes. So I was, I guess I still am a certified Wilton cake decorating instructor. And I taught those cake decorating classes you would see at like Michael's and Hobby Lobby. And that was a lot of fun. You know, I loved the creative side of that, but I also realized that I really enjoyed the teaching side of it, showing somebody how to do something and helping them work through all of that. So, continuing to fast forward, I always got to a point working at whatever job it was that it was just getting more and more difficult to do the job because my vision, my continual vision loss. And this was prior to really knowing how to advocate for myself. This was prior to really understanding assistive technology and adaptive equipment and all of that. So eventually I would have to leave whatever job I was doing and try to find something else. But that's always been the key for me is I've always really been, I've never been someone that just wanted to sit at home and not do anything. I've always like, I got to do something. Let's find something to do. So I've always been, you know, this isn't working now. That's okay. Shift gears. Let's see what else we can do. So that eventually led me into YouTube. And back in 20, it's probably 2008, I guess. I got a job. I applied for a job with a YouTube channel based in Texas, making videos about Android phones and Android tablets, teaching people how to, I guess, quote unquote, hack your Android phone and how to unlock all the cool things that Android can do. And I did that for a couple of years, making videos on this channel and raised that channel up to about 10,000 subscribers, which in the early 2010s, that was very respectable numbers. But during that time, no one ever knew that I was visually impaired making these videos. I didn't tell anybody because that's not what the channel was about. But every now and then, I would make a video about some type of adaptive or accessible app or on my phone or some setting that I was using to make my phone easier to see. And those videos got a lot of positive feedback from people in the community. I got a lot of positive comments. People like, you know, I didn't even know my phone could do this. This is awesome. I have low vision. What else can my phone do? And so that kind of got me thinking that maybe there was a need to start making videos about assistive technology and accessible apps and things like that. And then in 2013, one day I decided to search on YouTube for Stargardt's disease. I wanted to try and find some videos about Stargardt's disease. And at the time, there literally wasn't anything. I mean, there was a couple of videos from doctors talking about Stargardt's and what it was and that sort of thing, the medical side of it. But I was really looking for hearing people talking about their experiences living with it. And there really wasn't anything. I think there was one video. So I thought, well, you know what? Around this time, my other channel, the making videos about Android, that was kind of dying down. The guy I was making videos for, he wanted to go in a different direction. So I knew that would be ending soon. So once again, shifting gears, what else can we do? So I decided to create my own channel. In December of 2013, I started my channel. At the time, it was called The Blind Spot. Because I wanted it to be not only an homage to my vision impairment, which central vision loss, I've got really big blind spots, but I also wanted it to be represent a place on the internet where people could come and learn about low vision, learn about vision loss. So a literal blind spot on the internet. And I started making my videos. At the beginning, it was literally throwing darts at a board, whatever idea stuck, I would make a video about it. It was really random. I didn't really have any kind of schedule or any kind of goal for the channel. It was really just a hobby. And it really took about 3 years before it started to kind of take off, and it looked like it was going to turn into something or had the potential, had the legs to turn into something good. So I decided to start taking it seriously and buckle down and get on a schedule and start, you know, putting some effort into it, some real effort into it. And that's also 3 years into it is when I celebrated 1,000 subscribers, my first 1,000 subscribers. But later on that year, I celebrated 2,000 subscribers. So like I said, that's really when it started to kind of gain momentum and gain steam. Eventually, along the line, I changed the name. The current name is The Blind Life because it really, I wanted a name to better reflect what the channel was about. And really, the channel was about me sharing my blind life and hopefully, fingers crossed, helping others improve their blind lives. So Around 2016, another big milestone in my life happened. I got a job at a local nonprofit here in Lexington, which is the Bluegrass Council of the Blind. And we are also an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. Kentucky has two, the Kentucky Council of the Blind and the Bluegrass Council of the Blind. And so I got a position as the assistive technology program coordinator and started working with clients. And once again, going back to my old cake decorating days of working and training clients, and I loved it. Most of my clients are, 50 and above. So people losing vision later in life, generally to age-related conditions like age-related macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma. We see a lot of that kind of thing. I love it. I work with people every week. We do assistive technology training. We do evaluations. I do independent living skills evaluations, orientation and mobility, occupational therapy. I kind of cover everything in my little office. And it's been a lot of fun. I still, 2016 till now, I'm still doing that and really enjoy it. The channel since then has grown, and I continue to put time into it. I jokingly say that I only work part-time at the nonprofit, so I work 2 days at the office, and then the other 7 days a week I'm working on YouTube, because it literally is a full-time job. I post new videos every single Saturday. The YouTube channel, The Blind Life, has become probably the largest resource on the internet for information about assistive technology. And I've been very fortunate to kind of get to the point where companies love, working with me. Hopefully, I hope they love working with me. They continue to work with me, which is great. And they'll send me their new products, and I will, review it and make videos and post those videos. And a lot of people in the community use that as information of what's current on the market, what's good, what's bad, because I make honest reviews. I never sugarcoat it. If this is a terrible device, I'm going to tell you it's a terrible device. But I've got a ton of really cool stuff. I mean, right here next to me, I've got like 4 or 5 different brand new items that I'm currently making videos about. Happy to talk about any of that. The YouTube channel, like I said, is my primary home. That's where it all began, but it's not the only place I am. I'm on every social media. I'm on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and X Twitter and everything. I even have a podcast. The Blind Life Podcast is available on all the major podcast platforms out there. And it's still a lot of the same content or similar content. But I don't just focus on assistive technology, because I like to say I also focus on the life side of the blind life. So I do interviews with amazing people in the community. I do tips and tricks videos. I do how-to videos, everything from, how to brush your teeth. If you can't see the end of the toothbrush, how do you put the toothpaste on the end of the toothbrush, to amazing tours of, I did a tour of a flying hospital. It was a full eye vision hospital built into a big jumbo jet airplane. And I did a tour of that down in Miami and made a video about that. It was so cool. Really, really cool. But I also have a whole series on my channel called Working Blind, and that has been ported over to the podcast as well. And in that series, I interview people in the community who are working to hopefully inspire those out there that are thinking about, what kind of jobs can blind people do? Usually I get a lot of requests or a lot of emails from transition age students. They're coming out of high school, going into college, and they don't know what they can do. What kind of jobs can blind people do? And so this series has been great for them to hopefully inspire them as to the wide variety of jobs that are available for the visually impaired. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer. I'm an open book.
All right. I would like to know, How would you, I am asked a lot, how would you recommend to guide a blind person?
So, no, that's a very good question, and one that kind of comes up a lot. I travel a ton. Once again, very fortunate because of my YouTube channel. I'm traveling all the time. I've been on 36 airplanes so far this year. I'm going on a cruise next week. And then I'm going on another flight 2 weeks from now. So, and I do this all by myself. I travel by myself. So I experience this quite often. And it is shocking on how many people don't know the best way to guide someone who is visually impaired. And there are some basic techniques, obviously, but the main thing, it's not rocket science. I tell people all the time, the main thing is communication, and you don't assume anything. Number one, don't grab the person. You never grab the person. The blind person always holds on to you in whatever way they feel comfortable. You don't grab their arm. You don't pull them. You never grab the cane. That is the biggest one. I made a whole video called Don't Grab the Cane. number one thing not to do to a blind person was grabbing the cane, because that happens crazy all the time. But
It does.
it's just a matter of communication. You walk up to them, you say, first of all, I always encourage people, if you're approaching someone who's visually impaired, you're not sure how much they can see. And so you don't know if they won't know if you're talking to them or not. Excuse me. So I always say gently tap them on the shoulder, tap them on the arm, somewhere, appropriate. And as you're talking, excuse me, sir, you give them a tap just so that they know you're talking to them. And then ask the question. I'm here to take you to the gate. How would you like me to guide you? Would you like to grab my arm? Would you like to grab my shoulder? What's your preference? And then the person will tell them how they want to be guided and what side they want to be guided on. And then it's just a lot of communication. As I said, there are proper techniques for being a sighted guide and going through doorways. And when you come up to stairs or when you come up to a chair, you put your hand on the back of the chair so that they can trail down to the back of the chair. But even if you don't know any of that, it's all about communication. Let them know, oh, we're coming up to some stairs here. Oh, or we're going through a door. Once again, there's certain techniques of letting them know what side the swinging door is going to be on, just so that they're aware, all of that. But the most important thing is communication.
Very good. Very good. Okay. So you were saying that you have some tech products next to you.
I do. Yeah, I mean, I've
Tell
got.
us some about those. And remember, you're talking to mostly seniors.
Right.
Cool.
Yes. So I just did a video actually 2 weeks ago. I think it was a little over a week ago, on this guy. Let me pull him out here. This is the Stellar Trek, and it's about the size of a small cell phone, the old early 2000 cell phone. It has buttons on the front. There's nine buttons on the front. Five of those are a four-way directional pad with the OK button in the middle. And then there's four other buttons. Then you've got some buttons on the sides. But this is a GPS tool. At its heart, it does a lot of things, but at its heart, it is a navigational tool. You can use this to, you can put in maps and find your way from one point to another. You can set landmarks. So if I walk to the bus stop every day to catch the bus to work, I can add a landmark so that I can just quickly find that each time that I need it. I can set a landmark for the home. I can set a landmark for work. But landmarks could also be smaller things like, this is my dog's favorite fire hydrant. This is the landmark for the fire hydrant. It could be whatever you want. This also allows you to search maps, explore maps anywhere in the world. So I could go to Manhattan, a map of Manhattan right now, and I could explore through the device and find out, what's nearby. Go down to the next intersection, what's near that intersection, that sort of thing. And it's all done audible. So it's all spoken out to you. It has Bluetooth, it has headphone jack, so if you want to listen to it discreetly, you can. but it also can. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Is it about the same size as like a Victor Trek? If you've seen
Yes.
Okay.
Very, very similar. And this is essentially just the latest version of those Trek devices. This is the Stellar Trek number 3, just came out. And this has some unique features, new features. It has a camera in the back. And so utilizing that camera, it has several apps that are already installed. And I know they're going to be adding new apps quite often. But things like crosswalk detection, so it'll tell you where the crossing signal is, or it actually identifies like the zebra stripes on the ground, so you can know which way to walk to cross an intersection. It's got color identifier. It's got OCR, so I can take a picture of printed text and it will read it out loud to me. So lots of really cool features in the new Stellar Trek.
Cool. And about the price on that?
Oh, goodness. I probably should have prepped for that. I think it's, I want to say it's over 1,000.
I think so.
1,200, something like that, maybe.
Okay.
It's not cheap, that's for sure.
Well, that's cool. Okay, you can start raising your hands, but what's your next item that you have next to you?
Well, I know that you guys were interested in talking about some accessible phones.
Yes.
And so, you know, I work with this all the time with my clients. Smartphones are great. You know, I've got an Android phone here. I've got my iPhone over here. And they're fantastic. They're probably one of the best accessible devices that we have currently, just because they can do so many really helpful things. But not everybody wants a smartphone. You know, maybe you just don't care about Facebook. You don't care about any of that stuff. You just need a reliable phone for staying in contact, staying in contact with family and friends. Well, we have some great options currently on the market. This one that I'm holding up now is the Blind Shell phone. And this is the black. I have the red one at work. I should have brought that one. The red one shows up on camera a little bit better, but the Blind Shell phone, there's also a phone called Mini Vision 2, and there's another one called Smart Vision. These are all accessible feature phones, I guess you would say, which a feature phone is the kind of phone that was around before smartphones. You know, you think of the early 2000s, early 2010s, the Nokias, those types of phones. So, but people are making these again, but underneath the hood is an actual smartphone. So you get all the benefits of a smartphone in an accessible form. It does not have a touchscreen. It doesn't have, you know, crazy things like swiping and tapping and double tapping and all of that. It has physical buttons. So you can, and they're all very tactile, so you can feel them and know exactly where you are just by touch. I know that even if somebody has a little bit of neuropathy in their fingers, a little bit of tremors, still most people can use this phone without any problems. And I don't have the other two here to demonstrate, but they're all very, very similar. Whoops, I keep pushing buttons. So as you can hear, this thing talks out loud to you. Oh.
Call 1 of 7. Messages. Yep. 2 of 7. Contacts.
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the nice thing about this is it's kind of that old style of phone, like a flip phone, where it's all menu-based operating system. So you're in a menu and you just go up and down until you find what you want, and then you click OK, and then you go into that. And everything is read out loud to you. If you do have some low vision, maybe you just need large print, high contrast. The screen has that too, and it's all customizable. So right now I have the inverted color scheme. So it's white text on a black background, but you can switch that. You can do the black on yellow. You can do the blue on yellow. They've got several different color themes to choose from. Lots of different voices. You can do text to speech with this. So dictation, if I wanted to send a text message just using my voice, I could do that. If I wanted to make a phone call using my voice, I could do that. If I wanted to open up an app just using my voice, I could do that. Tons of features, tons of apps, games, music, audiobooks, a lot of the popular blind apps, low vision friendly apps that we're fond of are on the blind shell phone. So this is my favorite out of all the accessible phones out there right now. This is my favorite just because it does so many things and it does it really well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Sheila, do we have any hands?
Yes, we have Anicio.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for, so much for your presentation. I did hear your recent review of the Mini Vision smartphone, which was great. It seems like, unlike the blind shell, it does not have a lot of access to specialized apps. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. It's very kind of stripped down. It's very limited in what it can do. But once again, for someone out there that doesn't need a lot of things, that might be a good option.
Right. My concern is, and I've taught blind shell to a lot of people that just love it.
Yeah.
But there's a rumor out there that perhaps the blind shell may be going off the market, or it's not being supported. And I think one of the dangers with all these specialized technologies is because of the small market that we represent. They come in, they promise, and they deliver a great deal, like the blind shell, I mean, has certainly delivered. But is it sustainable? That's my concern. I don't know if you heard anything else more about it or not. Hopefully it's just a rumor.
Well, yes and no. So you're right. Blind Shell USA has temporarily closed down. But Blind Shell itself is a European company. It's based in the Czech Republic in Prague. I actually used to work for Blind Shell. I launched it in the US back in 2018. And I've been to their Prague office. Great, wonderful people over there. Blind Shell has been going since 2013, I believe, is when it was first created. And it's being sold in like 23 different countries. So it's well established and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. But I think they've had some issues with the company that was running it here in the US. So that office has closed down, but they're still selling it in the US. And I think they're even still selling it through certain distributors like Chicago Lighthouse and places like that. So it is still around. You're just not dealing with a U.S. office anymore, temporarily maybe. You're dealing with the Czech Republic office, like the main office, which, I've been there. Everybody speaks English. They're great people there. Really, really cool group of men and women there.
That is wonderful to know because it is such a wonderful device. And for some people, it really gives them such incredible access. So I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
I agree.
Have you seen the popular, and what do you think of the popular Ray-Ban Meta glasses?
So I have, and in fact, let me put on my Ray-Bans right now so you guys can see them. I just got these a little over a week ago, and because everybody has been wanting me to do a video about the Ray-Ban glasses. I got an email just this morning from a guy in Australia asking for a video, or have I done a video? And I am planning to do a video. These have been very popular, especially in the community. And I am planning on doing a video. I just have a couple of things in front of it. They're cool. I mean, I think they're cool. I think what they do right now is nice. It is a little bit limiting here and there, especially the what's in front of me command. You know, I did it here in my office, and I've got a lot of stuff in my office, and it said, hey, there's a box and a lamp in front of you. And I'm like, yeah, but there's also, you know, bookshelves and a table and a bunch of other stuff. So it's kind of it doesn't give you a ton of information. I've heard a lot of people have had great results with the text reading and getting that information, which arguably is one of the best uses for us. The nice thing, though, is that any kind of updates, improvements, it's all software. So it's going to be easy for, well, relatively easy for them to add new features in the future. It's good. Okay. And works pretty well, I think.
Awesome. Sheila, any more hands?
Yes, ma'am. 619 ending in 684. Can you unmute and tell us who you are, please? Star 6 will unmute you.
Yeah, I'm sorry it took me so long. This is Ginny. I just had a very brief question. The difference between the Stellar Trek 2 and 3, I wonder what, if it's probably a more expensive, obviously, and I wonder if it, at what point you need to upgrade maybe to the 3. I have a friend who has the 2, and I'm wondering, maybe he'll give me my cast off if he moves up to 3. I don't know.
Then he needs to upgrade immediately.
Yes, that's exactly right.
No, I don't know all of the differences. I know that this one has, I only know, like, you know, the information I was given about the 3, and it says that it now has the voice capability. So, you know, you can dictate what address you want and that sort of thing. So instead of having to manually type in an address, you could dictate it. I don't know if the 2 could do that or not, but, also says that now it has the sleep function, so you don't have to power it down and power it back up. You can put it to sleep, which will greatly extend the battery. And then the apps. I think the apps are kind of the new thing. So, you know, the OCR, the crosswalk detection, the colors. It can also do this thing where it will locate a front door for you and confirm the address. So if you're standing out in front, you know, GPS is great. Turn-by-turn navigation, walking directions are fantastic, but they only get you to the location. Most of these won't get you into the location. So then you can use this, and it has a where you can scan with the camera, and it will identify the front door, and it'll beep letting you know that you're pointing at the front door. It'll tell you how far away the front door is. And if it sees any kind of address numbers or door numbers or anything, it will confirm that for you. So that's pretty cool as well.
Yeah. It's a personal decision, and thank you.
Yeah.
Lori. Oh, I'm sorry, Danette.
So does it work, like if I wear hearing aid, does it work with, will it work with the Bluetooth within my hearing aid?
It or should. Yeah, it should. I mean, you would definitely want to confirm with your specific brand of hearing aid, but most of these tend to work with Bluetooth-enabled hearing aids.
And you're talking about the thing that kind of looks like the Victor Trek, right?
Correct.
Replaces the Victor Trek, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Lori, go ahead.
Hi, Sam. Nice to meet you. I can't stay because I have a cable technician coming, but my quick question, and I'm going to have to get off as soon as I say the question. I'm having trouble sending an email. My iPhone type is S like Sam, E as in Ella, 2020, like 2020 vision, which none of us has. Seriously, though. People can email me, but I cannot email. Every time I try to send from my iPhone, and I tap on send, it says cannot send email. So I don't know what my problem is, but it's weird.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely sounds like an Apple thing that you might want to take it to an Apple store and get someone to kind of look at it, because there's several things that it could be. I would say some setting got turned off or switched, or maybe some of the information for your email, your outgoing email information maybe got screwed up somewhere at some point. So that really just needs someone to kind of go and poke around in there and take a look at all of that to figure it out.
Because I was on the phone with Apple support yesterday, and we were on the phone for 3 hours because my phone would not charge. And finally, I got it to charge, but the battery is degraded. And I do have to go to Apple one of these days. And I asked the guy if I need an appointment. He said no. So he sent me an email that I can use when I go into the Apple store, whenever that is. And I can show them this email and they can put it in their system rather than me making an appointment. So I thought, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That way I don't have to make an appointment online. I can just, you know, I can just go in the store, show them that email and, you know, and then they can do whatever they want to do. But in the meantime, last time I tried to answer someone's email was today, and it said that my email address is incorrect and everybody else gets it. So that's weird. Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely sounds like something's going on. Either if the battery's messing up too, maybe something's going on with the phone itself. But it kind of sounds like it might just be a setting somewhere. Email, there's so many complicated settings in there. It'll drive you crazy.
It's
not surprising.
All right.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm going to have to go because my cable tech is on his way, and I just got a text telling me that he's on his way. So right. I don't want to miss his call. But but I hope that you can have this call again, because, and hopefully not on a day where I'm seeing somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
But it just happened. It just so happened that way. Yep. So.
Right.
And plus,
thank
we're having
you,
an electrical. Yep, and we're having a storm right now, so I need to get off.
Yep, okay. Thank you, Lori.
Thanks much.
All right,
Sheila,
Paul.
Who's next?
Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Hi.
Hello.
Sheila, did you call on me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Sam. It's finally nice to get to talk to you.
Hey, after seeing you
all these years. There was a phone that I saw at the National Convention. And unfortunately, they didn't have any literature, and I don't remember the name of it, but it was designed as I would call it a simple, stupid phone. It was completely audio, didn't really offer email, but you could access apps on it. It had was like a black screen, and again, there were no keys, so you had nothing that you had to punch into the phone to access anything.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you might remember what that was.
I do. It's kind of hard to forget because the name is the Real Sam Pocket. No relation. Yeah, I think that's what you're talking about. It kind of looks like a smartphone, and you just talk into it. It's got a big button at the bottom that you push to talk to it and everything. Yeah.
I don't remember, but I just thought it was really neat. I was thinking back in the early 80s, I worked in a phone store, and we used to talk about the old Western Electrics, which you could drop off the Empire State Building and then put it back in the wall and it would still work. It was basically it did the original purpose of the phone. You could make and receive a call.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it seemed. We have some people in my local chapter who they don't really want to do anything except make a call. And, you know, having some apps, like if you wanted to have access to Facebook or something like that, it might be nice to do that, or access to your contacts. But I just thought it was a great idea for the person who doesn't want the technology, that they could still have a good workable phone for them. And the price seemed very reasonable. I think it was around $300, give or take, something along that line. So I would assume they have a website also.
Yes. If it is the one that I'm thinking about, The Real Sam Pocket. I've got a video about it. I did a review of it. It's great that the whole premise of it is that it's all audio interface, right? You talk right to it. If you want to make a phone call, if you want to do whatever you want to do, you tell it to do it. So it does take out the little bit of that complication of knowing what buttons to press and that sort of thing. In my review, my one biggest critique was that you have to talk to it. That's the only way you can control it. And I think they have kind of fixed some things since then. But, you know, I kept thinking, well, what if I was in church, you know, and I couldn't really talk to it? What if I was, you know, we have a horse racing track here in Lexington where I live, and it's a very popular, and they have meets out there twice a year. And I'm like, if I were out there and I wanted to call to get a ride home, I wouldn't be able to because it's so loud out there. The phone wouldn't be able to hear me try to talk to it. So that was my only criticism, was that, you know, it seemed like there were situations where you just would not be able to use the phone. But other than that, it was pretty good.
Well, that's terrific. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks.
All right, Janet.
Hello, Sam. Nice to have you come speak to us. I'm liking the can you explain what other tech tools do you have in front of you?
Well, I also have the brand new not really a tech tool, I guess kind of, but it's the brand new Urban Explorer mobility cane that I just did a video about on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
And that video is going crazy. It's already over 3,000 views. And it was just done, put up Saturday morning. And so I've got that right here next to me. It's a new type of mobility cane that has an adjustable handle. So, you know, depending on which size you get, there's a small, medium, large, extra large. The extra large goes from, I think, 58 inches up to 63 inches. So you can adjust the handle to whatever height you need. And they're super strong, super durable. It was created by my buddy Sedona Dave out of Sedona, Arizona. And he is the creator of the all-terrain cane that came out last year, which is the mobility cane that's made out of steel and titanium, and you could, you know, throw it off of a cliff and it's going to be okay. And, you know, he uses it to go hiking in the desert with and all of that. So that was a really cool thing too, that just came out as well.
So this is a mobility cane, not a white cane.
Well, no, a mobility cane, a white cane. Yes. White cane.
Okay.
Not a stability cane. It is a white cane. So for mobility. Yeah.
Okay.
And it, 5-segment white cane, folds up, folding the adjustable handle, 9-inch grip. They also created a brand new tip. It's a dome tip, mm-hmm. where it's kind of like a marshmallow and a rolling ball tip got together, had a baby. That's the dome tip. So it's light, small and lightweight, like a marshmallow tip, but it has a little bit a dome end, so it's more rounded, so it will kind of glide over things much better, kind of like a rolling ball tip.
Have you seen the WeWalk cane?
Yes, I've got two of those in my closet.
And what do you think of that cane?
So the older version of the WeWalk cane, that's been out for several years, like 6-7 years now, was fine. It was okay. It was cool as far as a new technology. And if somebody just wants to have the cool new techie gadget, it was great. But it had some issues. It resembled, I always jokingly said it looked like a dustbuster on the end of a cane, because it was big and bulky and kind of reminded me of a dustbuster. Mm-hmm. And it was, so that meant it was a little bit heavy. And it was not waterproof, which, you know, I'm like, what cane can you not What's take out point? Into the rain? Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But you know, the WeWalk cane, if anybody's unfamiliar, it's an electronic cane. It's a smart cane. So it connects to an app on your phone. and it mm-hmm. provides turn-by-turn navigation, so mm-hmm. like GPS, and the sound comes through the cane. There's a speaker on the cane. Yep. And it also has sonar built in, so it can detect obstacles in your way using sonar, and it relays that information through haptics, so through vibration.
So the WeWalk cane has a camera on it. Here in Washington, it rains. So is that going to ruin the camera?
So, yes. So the original version of the WeWalk cane was not recommended to get wet. For whatever reason, whatever that means, that's what they would say. We don't recommend it getting wet. But now I will say that they just came out with the WeWalk version 2, and they listened to all the criticisms of the original WeWalk cane, and they fixed everything, and it is fantastic. Wow. I was supposed to get mine in May. Now they're saying it's going to be October. There's been some delays. I've seen it at different conferences, so I've gotten a chance to use it and play around with it. But I won't be making my full official video until October. But it it's more like they shrunk it down to where it's more like a regular white cane. So they got all the electronics and everything into a regular white cane handle. It is waterproof now. Yay! They fixed that problem. It has actual buttons. The first version had this weird touchpad that you had to do swiping on. But now it has actual buttons. It's about half the weight as the original cane, and it just looks good. It's got a great speaker. It's got a great flashlight on it. It will have AI integration. So not only will it take you to Starbucks, but once you're in Starbucks waiting in line, you can ask what's on the menu, and it will tell you what the specials are and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. Sheila, any hands?
Uh-huh. Tanya. What,
hold on just a second. How much would that kind of cane cost?
I think it's around $600.
I think so. That's what they were saying. They're at convention. Yeah.
Thanks.
Tanya, you can unmute.
Okay. I have two questions, Sam.
Sure.
The first one is about my neighborhood wideband Wi-Fi. And then the second one is, how safe is my Gmail because of the neighborhood wideband Wi-Fi that I don't want to have anything to do with? I do not want to be a part of it. I do not want them becoming aware of my websites. I've lost 2 phone numbers simply because when I go outside my house, the Wi-Fi pops on. So AT&T, and I don't like AT&T, but AT&T told me, when I complain with the Federal Communications Commission as a low vision diabetic, I had to get a lockdown phone. So I had to go into the store. I spent well over $1,000 on the credit card to get these lockdown phones. Okay. So now these 3 guys in the neighborhood, they can't pop my phone on if I'm in my garden or I'm sitting on my porch or if I'm hanging out my laundry. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now they've got this neighborhood wideband app, and the Opportunities for Ohio's with Disabilities gave me this beautiful Dell large screen computer that has all this sensitivity and all this power. And I'm supposed to be able to open my doors, go in and out of my house, and open my windows without this beautiful Dell computer connecting to whatever's going on in cyberspace. So I would like to know your response to that. And then my second question, of course, is the Gmail. If I log into my Gmail, I don't want anybody else getting a signal that I'm in Gmail. But from time to time, if I go to my security page in Gmail, it'll tell me there's another device signed in. I went to Amazon, and Amazon told me there's 4 apps associated with my account. So I had to reset Gmail, reset Amazon, which is very difficult to do with my kind of vision. Your response, please.
Well, first of all, unfortunately, I'm not an IT guy, so I don't really know too much about all of this. I do know that these neighborhood Wi-Fi and connected networks are becoming more popular. Amazon does it. You know, anytime you sign on a new Amazon Echo, it asks if you want to join the neighborhood net or whatever it is. And I always say no, because I'm the same way. I don't know. You know, it's my own little home. I don't want to be part of everybody else in that regard. I love my neighbors, but still. So there's got to be a way to turn those things off, you know, in the different security settings. Gmail should only be on another device if you signed into Gmail on like a phone or something like that. So the same thing. I know that you can go into the Gmail security settings and disable that kind of stuff. And it's not, unfortunately, a lot of these things, it's not disabled by default. You have to go in, like you said, and kind of hunt for it. I would definitely say that you could, you know, Best Buy has the Geek Squad at Best Buy. This is the kind of stuff that they do. And so you could probably take, if it's possible, take your computer, take your phone and all that, and go for an appointment and just kind of lay out your concerns and say, you know, here, make it so none of this stuff will happen. And they should be able to go in there and do that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you more, but I'm more AT than IT. I've got a buddy at work who's the IT guy, and I take these kind of questions to him.
So another question for you. So if somebody wanted to like receive training from you about how to do things on the phone or computer or something, would, if I send them like your email that you sent me, all those things at the bottom of your email, I could, that would give them your information and such?
Yeah, I do. I offer consulting. I offer training sessions, yeah. And it's all remote.
Would tell them how to get in touch with you.
Yes, you can just send my email out. Mm-hmm. Now, once again, though, I have to kind of preface that I do assistive technology. So I do training on AT and all of that. I don't really do training on IT, information and technology. So, if someone wants to know how to use VoiceOver on their phone, I'm your guy.
Mm-hmm. but not better use of numbers on the Mac.
Yeah. I mean, I could, yeah, not really. I could teach you how to use VoiceOver on a Mac, but not the actual. I'm actually not a Mac guy. I have a Mac. It's sitting right behind me, but I'm more just the assistive technology side of things.
Got it. Thanks. All right.
You Sheila, have 5 minutes. Anicio.
Okay.
Sam, just very quickly, the real Sam Pocket, I believe, is closer to $1,400 or $1,500. I think last time I saw it, right? Not $300 like Paul thought it might be.
Yes, and that's why I was thinking, well, maybe we're not talking about the same device because,
right.
Yeah, it's much, much more expensive than that.
Yeah. Thanks.
Spending a lot of money to be simple.
All right. That was another one of my critiques.
Well, that's why for people like that, for that kind of population that Paul was talking about, I think something like the Blind Shell is really an ideal device.
Right.
You want to take one more hand?
One more hand. Okay. Yep.
Jenny, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, this is very brief. This is kind of a two-in-one question. I have been without an iPhone, but I'm pretty confident I can get one. It's just getting started. I end up with the WeWa cane. Do you need an underlying smartphone to use the cane and get the orientation and mobility help? And if you have time now, I can email you later. What would you suggest as an entry-level iPhone for someone starting out?
Anna? So you don't need to use the app with the cane. The cane can be used by itself, and it's just you're not getting all the functionality. You'll get the obstacle detection, the sonar will work, and I think that may be about it as far as you're not going to get the turn-by-turn navigation. You're not going to get the what's near me, because I think all of that is done through the cane connected to the app. But if you do have the cane, then the app is kind of comes with it. It's free. You don't have to pay anything extra for it. As far as an iPhone, you know, all iPhones are basically the same. So I always say, don't get the most recent, the most expensive, you know, 15, they're about to, next month, they're about to announce 16. I use an iPhone 12 and it works great. It's still getting all the updates. It works fantastic. And you can find that used nowadays for just like $300, $400 probably. The only thing I would consider is screen size. So I use the iPhone 12 Pro Max, which is the largest screen, because most of us with low vision, kind of the golden rule, bigger is better. So that's the only thing really you want to consider. And then I guess some people really prefer the button, the home button, and you're kind of limited on nowadays. Some of the SE models have the home button, but most of the iPhones have gotten rid of that home button. So it's fine though. Like, I was really worried about it when they announced that it was going away. But once I got one without the home button, it just takes a little bit of practice to figure out. And even with VoiceOver, you'll pick it up pretty quickly and it's not a problem anymore.
Perfect. And then finally, what about the SE series? Do you have any qualms about that? It's often recommended for beginners, the SE 20.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, they still have the home button, which I think is the one of the main reasons why they'll recommend it for beginners. My daughter has an SE. They're fantastic, especially like the 2020 model, 2022, I think. And they're cheaper too. They're the smaller brand or smaller version though, so you won't get the nice big screen, but yeah, nothing wrong with them.
Cool. All right. Thank you, Sam. And we do have to almost time to quit. Doug, do you have any closing remarks?
I don't. Thank you, Sam.
My pleasure.
And thank you, and Sam. Jeanette,
and yeah. Sheila.
And Jane.
Jane. Yep.
Yes. Thank you, everybody.